back to an electrifying episode of You Missed It! I am your host of this episode. I, of course, being Rylan, I am joined by Jack, Alex, and Zachariah. Unfortunately, Andrew couldn't be here today because these days getting five grown-ass adults in the same room is pretty much impossible. So we gotta make do with what we got. Andrew, we love you, we miss you, but we gotta press on without you. Sorry, it's happened. It's going down. And what is going down is today's episode, that is Shock Corridor, the 1963 film written, directed, and produced by Samuel Fuller. Before we get into any more detail, you should probably know about other places that you can check us out. You're probably listening to us on Spotify, because I think that's what all the cool kids are using these days. We were on iTunes, but iTunes doesn't exist anymore, so neither does that. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all the usual things. Like just Google "You Missed It" or "YMI Podcast," and you'll find something or other. And give us a like and a follow and a comment and all that good stuff. And while you're in the progress of liking and following, you should do those same activities with a band, little band known as The Vidos. That is V-I-D-O-S, kind of like videos, but sans the E. If you liked our little introduction there, that's just a tiny little sample of the awesomeness for your ears that they have to offer, so I would check those guys out as well. All right, but now we are down to business. So the movie that we watched today is about a reporter named Mr. John Barrett, who has himself committed to a mental institution in order to attempt to track down a murderer. There was an unsolved murder of one of the inmates that had taken place in there, and he is hoping to get to the bottom of it, and in the process won himself a nice little award that is known as the Pulitzer Prize. Little, and you know, might have heard of it.
I think so.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly.
I think Ebert might have won it.
I think a few celebrated folks have won it.
Yeah, Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah, my boy. Anyways, a little bit of backstory on this one. I actually found some pretty cool stuff. The original screenplay was actually written, although the movie was released in 1963, the screenplay was originally written in the late 1940s. It was intended to be directed by Fritz Lang at the time. Now Lang wanted to change the lead character to be a woman, played by actress Joan Bennett, who at the time was appearing in most of Lang's work. However, Lang probably also noticed the similarities between the character of John Barrett and real-life journalist Nellie Bly. In 1887, she actually did have herself committed to a women's mental institution in order to go undercover and investigate rumors of neglect and abuse against the inmates. She ended up staying there for 10 days and released an exposé that went on to create reform at that institution. And then later on after that, she would actually go on to circumnavigate the world, kind of like inspired by Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days. Pretty awesome person. But anyways, check her out a little bit. Check out that expose if you can find it. Leave it as 10 Days in a Madhouse is the title of that one. All right, and a few... see, I always write my notes out of order, and that's why we got these little awkward moments of me getting myself rearranged. All right, but now you have other films set in at the backdrop of a mental institution. That is not a particularly new thing. There's other films that include kind of similar settings and themes are One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Shutter Island, and even most recently, 2018's Unsane. Those are all kind of better known than this one. And actually, Zach is the one who introduced me to this movie years and years ago, and it's kind of just lingered in the back of my brain since. Now, Shock Corridor was shot in 10 days only, and I could not find the budget on it, but it was very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was shot in one set. They pulled a lot of tricks to make that one set look bigger and more expansive than it was, shuffling things around. The matte paintings in the background, down to hiring little people to walk around in the background to make them look like they're further away, and therefore the set is actually bigger than it is. But yeah, in terms of actual budget and box office returns, wasn't able to find anything on that. Although I think it made its money back and maybe a little bit of a profit, but wasn't like explosive or anything. In terms of critical reception, in 1996, it was selected for preservation by the National Film Registry. So, the American art connoisseurs, I suppose, have deemed it worthy of preservation and worthy of cultural study. And it currently holds a 94% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but that is based on only 17 reviews, which says that contemporary critics have not even bothered to review it. It doesn't really appear to be on their radar. And even even on IMDb, where it holds a 7.5 out of 10 rating, that is based on fewer than 10,000 votes. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, for example, has nearly 850,000 votes in its rating. Some of the critical reviews of over the years have definitely been mixed. I have one here from Douglas Pratt in 2004, and it says, "It is a sober but deeply satirical depiction of a modern asylum in which the patients are clearly intended to remind one of various American political and social philosophies." Which, as you can imagine, it's a madhouse. There's definitely a cast of characters in there. Another one describes it as harsh, grotesque, and violent, and incidentally brilliant in every original way. And on the other side of the coin, I wasn't able to get an exact source on it other than that this was published in a newspaper somewhere in New York the year the film was released. Shock Corridor should never have been made. It is not only outright trash, but stands also as one of the most vicious and irresponsible pieces of filmmaking that the screen has given us in years. So, with that spectrum of opinions that are available out there, I am interested in ceasing to talk for a little bit and giving y'all a chance to let me know what you thought of it. So, as per usual, we're going to proceed to my left, and we'll make the first, well, I guess second, at least, of many puns. Zekko, how shocked were you?
Ooh. Let's just say that, as you said, it was electrifying in the beginning, and that corridor seemed short, because actually the movie went by quite fast, I must say. This was a corridor. It was short corridor. Yeah. So anyways, before I get into this, because I've seen the movie before and absolutely love it, but before, because I don't want to break tradition, because, you know, we've been away for a while, you know, we're coming back and things like that on the podcast. We can't forget about Jack's Mailbox. Yay. Can't forget, if you want to send whatever you'd like to Jack's Mailbox, feel free. He is willing to accept anything that you send, doesn't matter what it is.
Wrong.
He's okay.
Sad. Very sad of you to say.
you can send anything you want. Pictures of your butt, pictures of your grandma. You go send them to Jack's mailbox. He'll take them, send them cartons of milk for his bones. He loves that. Anyways, back to Shock Corridor. So Samuel Fuller, I feel like, is in general, like, along with this movie and many others, he's just an underrated director and writer, like, overall. Like, he's one of the, like, people who are, like, know his stuff consider him, like, one of the greats and stuff like that, but not a lot of people know of him, so he's, like, an underrated great, if you will, right? Like, he's made a lot of awesome movies, like White Dog and, obviously, Shock Corridor and Pick Up on South Street and stuff like that, and they're all, like, really good. But they don't really get the attention. They kind of came out at the day, and, like, some people kind of saw them. They might have broke even, as, like, Rylan said, like, it's possible that it probably like made about its budget or something around there. But nowadays it's like almost lost in time kind of thing. And, you know, and he died over 20 years ago. So there's also been a lot of time that's passed since then and nobody's really talked about him. So it's just kind of like, eh. Like there were little things in the 90s, like Tarantino, funny enough, Tarantino and Tim Robbins, they were kind of part of this documentary about his life. It was called, what was it called? The Typewriter, The Rifle, and The Movie Camera is what it's called. It's like an hour documentary where they like actually talk to Samuel Fuller about the movies, but they also kind of check out like different things surrounding his movies, like props and things like that. And they kind of get into like different discussions about his legacy, basically, and stuff like that. But pretty much, unless you were like a film aficionado, you know, really into his films and things like that, most people don't know it, but you should check them out because it's really, really, really sweet flicks, I gotta say. And Shock Corridor has always been my favorite. I haven't seen all of Samuel Fuller's movies, but Shock Corridor, it's just interesting. It's got like such an identity to it. It's kind of got that whole thing that pulls you in the very beginning. It's like, you know, a journalist and he's like investigating this murder and he's got to like therefore put himself into this asylum and stuff like that, and that kind of gets you in to this like regular kind of investigative type of story. But at the same time, you've got like all these colorful characters and things like that, like once they're in there and they're representing different things in society. And it's, he's always had kind of, Samuel Fuller's always kind of had a discussion on race in every one of his films. It's kind of like a common thread. And so in this film, he has a little bit of that as well with, I forget the character's name now, but
Trent,
right. Yeah. He's a black guy, but he thinks he's like a white supremacist pretty much. It's kind of like the David Chappelle.
Yep. The sketch, black a little white bit. Supremacist. Yeah.
And
black Klansman?
Yeah, basically. So stuff like that, he's always been way ahead of his time, and he was always very controversial in terms of his movies, because like he would display things like that with race and with like, you know, interracial like marriages and couples and things way before people were ready to accept it, even like Japanese and like, you know, American kind of couples and things around the time of the war and stuff like that, and it kind of really got under people's britches and stuff like that. So yeah, so he was always kind of good at bringing up that, and he was way ahead of his time in regards to that. But Shock Corridor is also like always entertaining. It's just a great movie in general. If you're wanting like kind of an interesting story, great performances, I think, from all the bit players and all like the main actors, and like Constance Towers, she's always a actress that's in like a lot of his movies and stuff, and she's always pretty solid. She's not in this movie a lot. She kind of comes in here and there. She's kind of playing the role of like the girlfriend or the wife, but she's still good in this movie. But she's been in a lot of his other films as well. But I find everybody in this movie just kind of brings their A game for the performances and things like that. And I am a big fan of the fact that a lot of this movie takes place like in the mental asylums. It's kind of one of those like one building movies, if you will. Not necessarily one room, but, you know, like one building, and kind of takes place all in there. Kind of makes it a little claustrophobic a little bit. You know, especially when he runs into the nymphos. Or nymphos will get you.
I'd forgotten about that part, mm-hmm. And then on rewatch, I'm just like, how does he know? Is that the only possible reason that women need to be institutionalized?
He was
like,
given a brochure.
They mentioned it earlier in the film. They mentioned it very, very briefly. It's a very quick throwaway thing.
A lot of this dialogue comes like right at you. Like,
oh, it
it's
does.
Definitely like blink and you miss it.
It really is like that, and not to mention they still get a little bit of that like film noir slang, just a little bit of it and stuff too here and there. But yeah, it's definitely, yeah, it's there like earlier in the film, just a brief kind of throwaway thing, and then it kind of comes into play in that scene okay. later on. But yeah, but it is kind of funny too, where it's like, oh yeah, all the women that are in there, or at least that room. You could say it's like, oh, it's all the nymphos.
It's a smart idea, putting them all together in one room. That's the best way to heal them.
Yeah, Exactly.
That's the best way to get the most effective.
Well, the thing that I find funny is it's like there's like a door that separates like the men from the women. Just a door. It's not even like a separate building.
It's a one-way door too.
Yeah, and it's a one-way door. Exactly. Yeah, it locks the other side, and all it takes is like some like the people working there to get distracted.
It locks you in with the nymphos.
Yeah, and then you just
get nymphed up.
Yeah, you get nymphed up. Exactly.
It's strange that the nymph room is connected to a dance hall.
Yeah.
So you go get your jig on and then you go get raped, kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Pretty much. Well, it's like, well, it's interesting because, yeah, they're kind of like dancing with like women and
they're
things.
They're just the standby dancers. Like, just wait here. We'll come grab you when one's tired.
Yeah, pretty much.
It just seemed like, okay, they're just on standby. You know, they're like waiting video game characters to get activated.
Yeah.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, like they're idle.
Yeah, they're just in their idle position.
Yeah, and then it's like as soon as you go into that run room, it's like, uh-oh, you've got all the enemies.
Yep.
Too many enemies in one room. You just, yeah.
This is the endurance round.
Yeah, exactly. This is the you took a wrong turn kind of deal. But, yeah, I mean, hey, but you know what? Like, I mean, there's no cops. And Andrew would be, if Andrew was here, he'd be like, there should have been.
There was a cop.
There was a cop.
There was a cop earlier in the film.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about like in the asylum.
There's no law and order in there.
Oh, yeah. There was a cop earlier in the film. And, you know, he got on the phone and he just took her word 100% and was just like, yeah.
Yeah, that was my question. And honestly, like, I legit wish Andrew was here right now because I want to ask him, like. Like, I mean, okay, so, like, if a woman goes, if you're a police officer and a woman comes to your station and is basically telling you that, like, her brother is, like, trying to do, like, sketchy shit to her, it's like, okay, are you ready to declare him mentally unsound? Like,
just
they jump right to that, which, I mean, in this case is exactly what the characters wanted, so that worked out pretty well, but, like, in real life, I'm like, I feel like you'd ask probably a few more things.
The only thing I can think about is the fact that it was a very different time. It was 63, right? So 62. Well, no, actually 63 probably when they were filming because it was 10 days. But, I mean, maybe it was a different time. Like, at the time, it could have been something that they heard all the time. They didn't have to do necessarily as much background. I don't know.
The only thing we've seen that's any, like, in another movie that's similar to this in terms of committing oneself, whatever like that, is the small scene in Ed Wood when Bela Lugosi commits himself for drug addiction and all that stuff. And it's kind of the same thing. You walk up to the doctor and you basically just say, yeah, this, and then they go, okay, you're in.
Yeah.
I guess.
But I think it might have been a common thing because I feel like especially mental asylums and things, they were a much bigger thing back then.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were running rampant and stuff. So if you said someone was crazy, like, it could have been a thing. I'm not certain, but it could have very well been a thing where it's like, okay, well, let's check. And to be fair, they did send those two guys, like, first in the office to, like, talk to him and stuff like that before they, like, took him out or whatever when he started, like, acting up and shit. Speaking of, it'd be kind of fun if, you know, if Andrew was at his work and he just kind of came in like that and pulled him out and he'd be like, Kathy, he'd be knocking all the stuff over and pull him to this podcast. It'd be great. Yeah.
That's how much we wish you were here.
Yeah, maybe Kathy is his instructor.
Wish you were here.
But overall, though, I mean, yeah, Shock Quarter, it's a fantastic movie. It's quick runtime. I think it's like an hour and a half or something.
Hour and 46.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
It goes by in a flash.
It goes by very fast. Like I said, the corridor is short.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a sexy corridor.
It's quick like a lightning bolt.
See, I would have called it sexy corridor. I don't know if that would have gone over as well.
That's what the nympho section is.
Yeah, actually, that would be the, like, they should have come out at the same time. You should have done two movies, Sexy Corridor and Chalk Corridor.
I think that's...
It does its own porn spinoff?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was Fritz Lang's original title back in the 40s.
Sexy Corridor.
Sexy Corridor.
The German version. Yeah.
Well, the title of the screenplay back in the 40s was Straightjacket.
Yeah.
Was the name of it.
That's a good title.
Which is a good title, yeah. But yeah, obviously things changed quite a bit since
Didn't Fritz Lang die by then? Wasn't he dead by then?
By like 63?
Yeah.
I think so. I can't remember for sure, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
His career really kind of, like, he didn't make too many more movies after the 30s. I don't think.
Well, he did...
He had, like, I know M. He had M, but...
M was 41. 31?
No. That was 31.
Was it 31?
31, 32, something like that.
Oh, yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Because he did Metropolis in, like, 27 or
something. Right. Yeah, Metropolis was before.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he probably was, like, super dead.
Well, I guess if he was writing the script in, like, the 40s, I guess he was still working.
But it was Samuel Fuller who was... Yeah, so he would have been at the time. Like, he would have been around the 40s.
Yeah. But
by 63, I'm not sure. Because that's, like, almost a decade and a half or so after, yeah.
Yeah, that one got shelved for a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Development hell is a bitch.
Well, Samuel, Samuel Fuller had an even worse case of that with White Dog, which is a film I really want to bring in now for this podcast. It's been on my list for a while. It's his last movie. It's his last movie that he ever did in 82. It got shelved for 10 years and finally got to play in theaters in like 92 or something.
Crazy.
So yeah, there's a whole thing behind that. But again, like I was saying, the racing before, like in this movie, it's kind of like a part of it. But like in that movie, in White Dog, it's like the movie is like about race, pretty much. It's a big, big part of it. But done in a very, again, interesting way. He always has a way of like making the films kind of stand out and have its own identity, and they end up being very memorable, yet entertaining and engaging throughout. And I find he always gets good performances of the actors. And yeah, it's just always a solid time. And Shock Corridor, to me, from the films I've seen, that's probably my favorite example of his work that I've seen. And every film that I've seen has been really good of his. So yeah, so I'd say check out Samuel Fuller.
Indeed. And we haven't heard much from Alex, so I think it is your turn to give us the lowdown on your thoughts.
Oh, I got a lobotomy from this film. Contrary to what Zach said, I think this film dragged a bit for me.
What?
Yeah. I can understand why some of the scenes were as long as they were, especially with regards to the main character, who really looked like Charlie Sheen in his early 20s.
A little bit, yeah.
I was waiting for the hashtag winning the entire time.
I was actually, Tiger Blood.
Actually, speaking of, I saw more Nathan Fillion.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, she would know, but it's, yeah, no, I just saw, like, yeah, the very beginning, I was like, I'm expecting him to hop on the space and plot or the laser gun sooner or later. Shows I've not watched Firefly.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. I saw Nathan Fillion. Maybe it's a combo. Maybe it's his dad.
Yeah, it's like a reverse combination thing.
Because
they both came after this actor. So it's like in Philly the past Nathan kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see more Martin Sheen or Emilio than Charlie.
Ooh.
Charlie seems a little bit more alert because he's like...
Because he's all coked up and shit.
Yeah, he's
yeah, that's when he's screaming in the corridor when it's raining. Yeah. That's Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
That's where he's... Oh, okay, yeah. I see
it's,
what you mean.
It's the evolution. Yeah. It was the biography well before it actually happened.
It's showing the whole family in one person. That's what it's doing.
Charlie...
Really.
The premonition.
Yeah.
Charlie saw this film when he was really young, and he thought, I need an exit plan. This is it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go crazy.
Yeah.
And shit.
He's like, I'm going to go under disguise. I'm going to put myself as an actor in the Hollywood system, and I'm just going to go crazy.
That's going to preserve my legacy.
Perfect.
Some of those scenes where the main character was getting to know the three witnesses, and the three witnesses, well, two of them, the doctor, that didn't seem to go on too long.
Mm-mm.
But the first and the second,
mm-hmm.
I think that was a test of his patience. Like, how far is he willing to go to get the confession or whatever he wants from these people? And it seemed kind of long for me. But again, it's an endurance test, I think, because you want to see how far this guy's going to go with it.
Right.
Is he going to crack under the pressure and say, no, I'm a plant?
Yeah.
But he, of course, spoilers, does that at the end. But by that time, it's too late.
Yeah.
I'm sure if he said that earlier in the film, they probably would have believed him.
But also wouldn't have had a movie.
Yeah. Well, it could have been a nice short film.
Oh, sure. He's just like, oh, I gave up. Yeah. He's just done, roll the credits, you know, the couple's happy at least.
Or just like cut it after the like the first witness. It's like, well, we know the perpetrator was somebody who works in the hospital. Cops couldn't figure that much out. Let's just leave it in their hands. Still, and take it from there.
Yeah, they wore white pants. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it just comes up. The title is revealed. White pants.
White pants.
1963.
White pant murderer
in the Tacoma Dome.
Yeah. See it live.
At
live.
SummerSlam.
I need a lobotomy.
Now I'm like seeing that, like hearing that commentary like played over like one of the brawl scenes, like where they're all like rolling on the floor.
It's one black man versus another. No, sorry, I can't go there. No. I can't say that because I'm a white man. Hey, speaking of SJW stuff, that cop at the beginning, that was the birth of the hashtag Believe All Women.
Oh.
That's where that comes from.
There you go.
Yes. So some SJW watched Shock Corridor a few years ago.
See, the precedent was set in the 60s, people. Get with the times.
Yeah. Yeah, women's lib in the 20s, freedom in the 60s, and then we just picked little bits
and
from there.
And then whatever the hell we're in now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and I guess all cops back then, they just, you know, if you're a woman, you're like,
I still,
you know,
like, can't get past that. It's just like, it's just basically like, I'm being assaulted by a member of my family. The answer isn't like, press charges. It's like, okay, he's crazy.
Well, you know what I think we should do? I think we should call the cop expert. We should go call Andrew, call him up. Yeah.
He's definitely crazy, but we should definitely still allow visitations between the two.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, especially when they get really close to each other.
Let's see what Andrew has to say. see what Andrew's got to say.
Oh, we're going to get the Andrew. Oh.
Oh, we're going to try and get him on the line here.
Yeah.
We're going to have a phone-in guest.
Hey, how's it going, Andrew?
Not bad. What's up?
So listen, so we're on the podcast right now, and we were just wondering, have a few questions for you about cops in the early 60s. Need your input.
Because I'm the expert on early 60s cops.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I figured it was too important not to have you chime in here.
Your absence is severely felt in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was it a cop-centric film?
I mean, in a sense. It kind of kicks things off, if you think about it.
Yeah, the catalyst of events was cop-centric.
It was cop-centric,
one
absolutely.
One cop in particular.
Yeah, one cop. So here's the question, Andrew. In 1963, if a woman walks in to a cop station, there's like the one cop, and he's like working late at night, and he's like, "Arr," and she shows up.
Is he a pirate?
He's not a pirate, Arr. No. Like he's just, you know, hasn't had enough coffee or whatever. And she goes up and says, my brother's crazy and tried to attack me and blah blah blah, and he asks like if she's ready to declare if he's mentally insane, and she says yes, and then they basically like send the mental institution after him. Do you think that's what the cop would do? They'd ring him up right away and send them right over.
You gotta remember the ancestral shit too.
Oh yes, and the fact that it's like the sister and brother kind of thing, and he's going after his sister and trying to kiss her and stuff like that.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Sorry, who's trying to kiss who?
So this woman, right? So this is like the sister walks up to this policeman and is like, "Hey, my brother's trying to, you know, get all sweet with me. And I think he's crazy. And he's threatening to kill me and stuff."
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Yeah, is you ready to declare if he's mentally insane?" She says, "Yeah." She says, "Yeah." And then he's like, "All right, let me get him on the phone." Is that a normal practice, would you say?
No.
In 1963?
I'd say it's a legal process. I don't really see what the cop has too much to do with it other than like taking the report and forwarding along to the right departments, but
he can't call the shots.
Like a legal process, that would be a legal process. It's like a whole, you have to be outfit, and somebody has to be considered your guardian or whatever, like you're in charge of you, right? Whether it's the state, that's a whole thing, right?
But there's no rules in 1963.
Declared insane and that you can't take care of yourself. That's a whole thing. You can't just have a cop be like, "All right, I guess your sister says so."
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, it's 1963. I mean, there's no rules. Cops can do what they want, right?
1963, there were just stupid sexist rules, but there were still, there were like sexist, racist rules, but there were still rules.
I think Andrew would really like this movie.
I think this kicks the whole thing off, Andrew.
He's bringing up a lot of the themes and elements in this movie. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah, did you see this already?
I have no idea what movie you guys are talking
about. Oh, we're talking about Shock Corridor. I should have probably mentioned that.
Yeah, that would have been helpful.
Yeah, but it was pretty shocking, as you can tell.
What's it called?
Shock Corridor.
Shock Corridor.
It's called Waterboy.
It's shocking how little thought this cop put into actually doing his job. So.
Yeah. Ooh.
But just because Zach's there doesn't mean that I can't have some puns too.
That's true. I mean, Andrew does love the puns. I mean, that's one thing that we've established on this show.
You can send all the pun-related merchandise to Andrew's mailbox.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Andrew's got a mailbox. We all got a mailbox,
just all
right?
The racist, sexist paraphernalia to Jack's mailbox.
Yeah, we already covered that. Luckily, I mean,
okay.
Yeah, Jack okay. appreciates those items.
Oh, do I ever?
My thoughts are, cop should just do his job and maybe stop overstretching himself. He's a cop, late night at a desk. Maybe he should just do what I expect of him to be lazy.
He forwarded it straight to the mental asylum.
It would have been more in character if he had just sent her away and just been like, whatever, you're just a woman, you don't know what you're talking about. That would have been more time appropriate
in that area. Also, so you're saying that the problem is that he believed her.
So he was too ahead of his time.
Too ahead
to
of his time,
sense.
If you will, right?
He was a cop who was a little too forward thinking.
Too forward thinking, but also too trusting.
That's right. That's okay. right. So okay. that's my thought on this cop, having not seen him.
Okay. Interesting. I just wanted to get your input on that because it was important. There's no cops for the rest of the film, by the way, so it's great. People running around screaming and stuff. It's wonderful.
No cops for the rest of the film?
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. 1963, is it a small town, or are we talking...
It's just all in a mental asylum, so they're like, we don't need cops.
Arguably, it
but
takes place
say,
in
like,
one street.
Where this movie is? Is it not, like,
I can't remember.
Or...
It's probably like New York or something, or some city.
Are you shitting me?
I don't know what city it is. I can't tell you what city it is. It's just a city, though. It wasn't like a small town. It seemed like it was a city.
Okay, then there should definitely have been lots of cops around, so...
Yeah, well, especially they don't need them at the mental asylum, though. They can just let them run around. The attendants got it. They got the doctors, they got the attendants, it's good enough.
They also have a shit ton of cops at mental asylums.
No, they don't need that. That's no fun.
You know, whatever. I guess it's just Arkham Asylum from Gotham City.
Exactly.
This is what this movie is. That's what it makes you making it sound like, so...
Yeah, it's good fun. It's good fun.
Yeah. So you guys watch Batman. Cool.
Yeah. in a sense, yeah. You know, I mean, detective did go into the mental asylum and he did try to solve a crime, and I don't want to spoil the movie for you because it's actually quite good, but, you know, he's going after,
spoilers there. I guess I missed it.
Yeah, he's trying to fight crime.
He definitely missed it.
Oh! There you go.
Oh, well.
But it's only an hour and 46 out of your life if you want to watch it in your spare time.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out.
Go watch it on the Criterion Channel, man. You own it, don't you?
Yeah, Criterion Channel. Please sponsor us.
I actually stopped subscribing to the Criterion Channel for a bit.
Actually?
And there goes the sponsorship.
Oh, I thought you had the annual membership. Oh, boy. What you doing?
No,
this is the last episode with Andrew on the show. He's handing in his movie card.
Andrew, what you doing, boy?
Honestly, man, it was just getting expensive. It was in U.S. dollars, you know?
The U.S.
ain't so good right now.
Yeah, they'll get you down for sure.
We ain't never going to get a sponsorship from Criterion Channel now.
Canadian dollars, so I stop eating that exchange rate constantly.
Hey, I like it. It turns me on.
Oh, you like the rush of never knowing how much you're going to pay each month.
Exactly. And also the Criterion. Well, you just pay the one time. Do the annual, you goof.
They didn't offer the end. But I mean, I don't know. That was a lot of dollars for something I wasn't 100%.
So I was 110.
I was checking it out. It was brand new, you know.
Oh.
We'll see.
All right, boy.
See how I think about it. But I can look up this movie. Don't worry. Shock Corridor. I remember.
Shock Corridor. Yeah. You should watch it in a corridor too. It makes it extra exciting.
Oh I'll try to put my TV in a corridor just for you.
That's cool. You should record yourself doing that.
And watch it during a thunder and lightning storm for a perfect atmosphere.
With my TV watching Shaw Corridor.
Yeah, and then make sure it rains in the corridor, if you can.
And then we'll make a shirt out of it.
Just open a window that is in my corridor.
I mean, or turn on the sprinklers or something. I mean, that will work, I guess.
Just have Denise standing behind me with like a flower, like a watering for flowers, like
that. I guess you could do that too. Somebody who's just constantly
standing on a ladder and just dumping it on my head.
Yeah, they have like a hose in the bucket or whatever. That'd be great.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Now that's atmosphere.
Yeah. Anyway,
well, thank you so much for chiming in.
No problem. You guys enjoy the rest of your podcast. Sorry I couldn't make it, but I will be there next time.
Yeah. All right, see ya, boy.
See you, bud.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Penis. So anyways.
So Alex, what did you think of this movie again?
I thought Andrew could have boiled his now I'm going to go into that. I thought he could have boiled his commentary down.
Oh, Andrew, son of a bitch.
I think he just should have summed it up by saying, fuck the police. Come on, fuck the police.
Oh, yeah, those police, man. Yeah. Always causing trouble. Never around when you need them.
Yeah, he's definitely the man to say fuck the police at his.
Yeah. Especially like Ice Cube would. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That notable thespian, Ice Cube.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
he's a brilliant man.
You know, there were some inconsistencies with regards to continuity when you go from the two-shot to the close-up and then back to the two-shot, but it's 1963.
10 days.
10 days, yeah.
There was one shot, it was between Kathy and the lead psychiatrist, and it was right near the end of their scene. I can't remember what it was, but it was a dolly shot that was pulling back, and then all of a sudden it cuts to, I think, a close-up on him, and then the scene ended, which didn't make any sense whatsoever to me, but I guess they needed that for coverage or something. We're going to get to Jack in a minute, and he'll explain it. It was a decent film. Of course, with being in a mental asylum, you can go pretty much anywhere in terms of dialogue and characters. And yeah, like you were saying, Zach, Samuel Fuller could throw a lot in terms of political commentary in there. Commentary of the day, which still goes on to this day. Mm-hmm. So I guess we still haven't learned anything.
Yeah, there's a bit of that, but then also him being ahead of the time too, where a lot of that stuff wasn't accepted and was controversial. Now it's a little more like, you know, like, yeah.
It's talked about, but it's I don't think it would still be accepted. It's just accepted enough to talk about, but people argue over it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Maybe he thought that putting it in the context of a mental asylum, it would be more satirical, perhaps, because maybe he was thinking ahead in terms of people seeing this 10, 20, 30 years down the road will look back at topics like that and laugh it off and say, we've gotten way past that.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't.
Yeah.
So he is kind of, I guess, a visionary ahead of his time in that regard.
Yeah, I always feel like he always has been. On topics and stuff. And like I said, this film wasn't really like race built, you know what I mean? It was just kind of like that one character when that kind of comes in and everything. But but a lot of his movies do deal with race. It is like a common thread that kind of goes through. And so a lot of those movies I find are ahead of their time and things like that. And like I was saying with like interracial couples and stuff. Like,
oh, yeah.
At times when it was just like a Japanese like and white man or something, it was just like, yeah, no. At that time, a lot of people were against it, and he was like, well, what's the problem kind of thing, right? He was one of those guys that was just like, never had a problem with race whatsoever, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So he's kind of a ahead of his time in that regard.
Yeah, even one of the doctors who is in on it was played by an Asian man as well, which is probably pretty unusual for that decade, showing a person of color in like a respected high status type.
Exactly.
Role.
And he had featured a lot of Asian actors like a long time even before this movie. Like he had done that like throughout his career and stuff. Again, he was just a guy who just never had any issues with that back in the day when it was like a hot kind of thing where people were all up in arms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Purists and
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. I think The Great Race, who was the director of The Great Race?
It was like Blake Edwards, I think.
Yeah. Did he write the screenplay as well?
Ooh.
Because I swear the people who wrote The Great Race saw the demolition of the psychiatrist's office as well as the kitchen, and they're like, we got to do that on a bigger scale.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you never know. It's a lot of things are crazy at that time. The 60s was an interesting time.
The, right? Oh, yeah. The story was developed by Blake Edwards, mm-hmm. but the screenplay and also the story was developed by Arthur A. Ross.
Okay.
Who
Arthur.
Also has screenplay and credits for writing like The Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Ooh. Lagoon.
Nice.
Yeah.
Puberty.
Puberty. The word of the day, puberty.
A Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I think of it as more like pew, pew, pew. That's oh.
All in all, it was a decent film. I like the concept, mm-hmm. and yeah, there are definitely real-life people out there who will go to those lengths yeah. to get a story. So on the scale of 1 to 10 of how does it make you feel, I'd put it at about a 6.5.
Okay.
Because I was entertained by the quote-unquote crazy people. For me, it went on a bit too long.
Oh, okay.
I think it could have been cut a bit shorter. Hour 40, hour 35. Just tighten it up a little bit. That's what I would have done. And the dreaming in color, that was interesting.
That was interesting too, because I feel like it would have worked a lot as like a stage play with the exception of those elements, just kind of the tone of the dialogue, I want to say soapboxy nature of the dialogue, but it wasn't it wasn't as preachy as a lot of like these types of movies can be, because it's good characters, good performances. It's not just like oh, here's an ensemble of half a dozen characters who are all serve as mouthpieces for the author. Like that's not particularly interesting. But yeah, the color bits was definitely a cool. Kind of like jars you out of the flow like a little bit, like just enough to kind of make you question what's going on.
Yeah, but it's a nice little visual change of pace.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no problem with the acting. I wouldn't say that anyone overacted anything, especially not the bit players mm-hmm. who were doing the mental patient parts. The main mm-hmm. character, of course, he did it so he could get in there, and you could definitely see that. But it's to great effect.
Well, that's just the thing, is it's kind of cool, because, like, in a way, it's like, well, he's playing a part in a movie, right? Yeah. So it's that whole, like, kind of double thing where it's like, oh, but he's doing it on purpose.
Yes.
To, like, try and convince them, right?
Exactly.
And also to distinguish between, like, his real role in this movie... Yeah. As a normal guy versus, like, you know, him playing a part. It's always tricky. Like, I don't know what your input is on that, Alex, but because I've never really acted, I guess, like a whole lot, but it must be tricky to kind of play that double role, you know what I mean? Like, in a movie where it's like, oh, you're like a normal person, but that character's obviously fake, but then you've got to, like, play a fake person on top of that, you know exactly. what I mean?
And keeping a consistent take after take.
Yeah.
Differentiating
scene
them.
Scene after scene, like.
Yeah.
A lot of rehearsal goes into that.
Right.
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr., Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, actually.
Good example.
That's a good example.
Yeah.
A shining paragon example.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. McQuiston, let's hear your thoughts of this. Now, to preface this, Jack has had an opportunity to see this film. he was present along with Zach and myself at Zach's apartment several years ago when this was shown. However, he only managed to retain consciousness for the first maybe 5-ish minutes of the film before
he hit some
passing
Z's.
Out woefully unconscious for the rest of the film. So I hope that doesn't bode for how interesting you found it this time around.
Yeah, I think the movie's better the first time when I saw it.
Ah! Oh, snap.
I cut out myself there. Yeah, I don't even think... I don't even think I made it out of the crest the first time, actually, because once I got into that office, I was like, I have no idea what's going on.
Wow.
Okay. So, yeah, just the opening credits.
First, like, minute, then.
Yeah. So, yeah, we gave myself too much credit the first time.
Not
5 minutes, maybe a minute and a half.
Yeah. Jack was not ready.
No, I was not, particularly at that point. I don't know if I was ready now, either.
Getting juicy.
Throwbacks.
McJuicy.
Yeah. No, it's Mc. No, not Mc. No, it's not McJuicy. It's McTasty.
Oh.
anyways, enough of that nonsense. Onto this nonsense. yeah, this was a bit of a mixed bag for me. I had a hard time getting into it. I'm with Alex. I did think the pacing was a bit off throughout this movie. When you revealed that it was shot in 10 days, I'm like, well, that just answered a lot of my questions. in terms of certain edits and certain cutting, just felt a little off. I didn't know if it was intentional at times, and I was trying to think if that's what they were doing. But then it just kept happening at odd moments where I was like, no, he's just... The budget is showing a little bit in some spots. So I was like,
the fact that there was no room for reshoots is showing.
Yeah, because they did a lot of one takes where there were like a lot of blocking, a lot of, you know, holding the frame and turn shots, and then basically spliced in inserts just to piece together, or just did a jump cut just to show between the two takes. The whole, like, him fighting the doctor into the kitchen was, like, a certain spot where I'm like, they're going to cut there because he probably had something on him when he was being slid across the table, and then sure enough, they cut.
Yeah. Yep.
Little things like that you notice, but, I don't know. What I was fascinated with this movie more than anything was I felt like this was a unique, film when it was made, because I felt like it was stuck in that transitional period of old Hollywood and new Hollywood. I felt like this was kind of like that movie that was just caught in the middle, where you can see the new freedoms they have to explore, both thematically, through dialogue, through story. Like, there's things that even just certain words you would never hear them say 3-4 years ago. Like, this is just 3 years after Psycho, and Psycho, you know, broke new ground in terms of, you know, how weird can you get, and how uncomfortable can, you know, real life be, actually, instead of just a monster or something like that. So this film was sort of like, okay, the doors have been open, let's see how far we can go with it. But my issue is that I felt like a lot of the holdovers from, like, how they used to make movies back in the day, the old standard, I think actually was kind of holding this movie back. I did not really like the performance of the lead guy too much. I felt like he was stuck in the 50s, in the 40s way of acting, where I felt like someone like a James Dean, Marlon Brando type character who has a little bit more depth and method into it, I felt like could have explored and really kind of elevated the dual performance per se, and would have added a little bit more weight to him actually going insane. Because I felt like most of this was just way over the top. You know, this is the acting that Tommy was so...
tearing me apart.
This is basically what he would look up to. Oh, yes, I fight acting. like, that's pretty much what I saw. Now, this is obviously... like, that style, everyone does a good job, and I felt like the bit characters were the standouts by far, like the opera singer and the suspects per se. Them individually, I thought, were by far the most interesting, because that's obviously where I guess the director had his most thematic elements in terms of on America. You see the different stages of, like, you have Confederate soldier of, you know, dealing with that time, and then you have the African American who thinks he's a white supremacist side of things, which is very current even today. And then you had the guy dealing with, like,
the doctor or whatever,
the scientist dealing with the bomb and the war and all that, and all of them dealing with the ugly sides of America and them being affected by it.
So like I kind of got that, but like you were saying, like the pacing was just off. The acting just I felt like was stuck 10 years ago. I didn't feel like there's a lot of stakes in this film because I kind of knew where it was gonna go.
Mm.
Like I just was like, yeah, he's just gonna go insane, yeah. And that's the movie.
Yep.
It's just whether or not the journey was worth it. And you know, I thought in fact, it was shot in 10 days. I was like, holy shit! Like there's mm-hmm. some like great compositions. The black and white photography was very nice. Well composition, well framed. Cinematography was great. Color sequences were interesting, but aged it in my opinion more so because the black and white footage here I thought looked crisp, sharp. It looked really nice, but then the color footage just looks something straight out of like 8mm from the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
From like this 70s, 60s or whatever, and it just kind of dates the movie. It looks almost gimmicky at a time. But that's just a nitpick on my on my end there. Yeah, but I don't know. There's a few things that like I kind of liked, like when it would just the fact that they could do new explore new ground, new territory with subject matter and all that. It shows that the filmmaker is having fun with. Oh, we can do this now. But I felt like the old ways of making films kind of made it feel a little awkward and just a clash of styles in a sense. I feel like if this was made like 5 years later, it would have actually been probably a bit better because they would have maybe seen more of the tools and freedoms with like New Hollywood growing. You know, by the time the late 60s came around with, you know, Bonnie and Clyde and all that, these type of movies, I felt like if... you took this script and had waited a little longer, the new ways of approaching filmmaking, I think, would have helped elevate this film even more. I felt like it was a little stuck in the way of like films were made in the 50s and 60s. Like I could see this with like the classic trailer with like, see this film on, you know, Betamax or whatever.
Just, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I just felt like it was fascinating just seeing a movie almost stuck in between transitional periods of, you know, Hollywood and the movie world in general, and actually just of the counterculture or 60s in general of mm-hmm. everything changing.
Yeah.
Overall I thought it was, you know, a bit of a mixed bag. I like it was interesting. I definitely want to see more of this guy's films.
Oh yeah. Well, that's why I said like White Dog, I really want to bring in. Cause that was from 82.
Yeah. Cause he's definitely no hack. Yeah. He's definitely got an eye and he's definitely, a bit of an auteur in a sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he definitely,
but very underrated. Like I feel like again, nobody knows who this guy is even to this day.
Right.
Nobody talks about him, but he's actually got like a filmography that if you do know him, it's like oh, like you got to check out all his stuff.
You've talked about White Dog, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I've heard you talk about that one before, and
but he's got a lot of other great ones. Like the other thread that I forgot to mention, of course, because he was a soldier, like he was in the war and everything, and World War, World War II or whatever.
Yeah.
And so there's always like a war threat. And he's actually made like a lot of like famous like war movies. Like he did like The Steel Helmet and stuff like that, which is like, it has an amazing opening shot where it's just like this helmet with like a bullet hole in it. Like the title goes by and then like you see the helmet just kind of raise. It's like a close up and just raise. And it's like this guy's like face and stuff. And it's like, oh shit.
Oh yeah.
Kind of thing. It's really cool. Also in that movie, Steel Helmet, that's what Martin Scorsese based the Raging Bull ring fight on. The whole, smoke and everything.
It's
from a sequence in that movie.
Yeah.
So,
And I could definitely see, you mentioned Ryland, and I think I read this too, Shutter Island getting a lot of influence from this
movie. He said that too.
I can see that. I can see also, like, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest having a little bit of, like... This is sort of like the low budget B movie of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You know, this is like kind of taking like the insane asylum, but adding some prestigeness to it, which is the Cuckoo's Nest movie. This one was just like, like 10 years ago, you would see just a different type of insane asylum type of vibe, and they wouldn't explore certain subject matters or they'd be very dated subject matters. This one was actually exploring real. Problems with people like that's actually affecting America, and each of the patients kind of highlighted that. And at least in that sense, they it wasn't like, even though it was a satire, it wasn't a mockery or making fun of the patients. It was more kind of the fact that, you know, this guy goes to a hospital where you're supposed to get better, ends up more insane.
Yeah.
Kind of is like, are these hospitals actually doing any good? And no.
That's why a lot of them were closed down in the 80s.
Yeah.
Session 9, remember I mentioned.
Yeah. And then what do they do? Does that fix the problem? No, because it just leaves the people on the streets.
Yeah, they just become homeless.
It's just, no, your method of doing it was wrong. Don't get rid of the method.
Yeah.
Dumbasses.
Yeah. Riverview. We got a lot of fun inmates from that.
Thanks, Reagan. Yeah. Thank you, Reagan. Thanks.
Thanks, I hate it.
So you could say with this movie that you weren't exactly shocked, but you maybe got a little buzz or something.
Maybe more of a static electricity.
Yeah, I was on low battery mode, just conserving the energy. You know, I was
power
on
saving mode.
I was on power saving mode. Yeah, I wasn't red; I was yellow.
Oh, okay.
But I can definitely see the value, and I can definitely see why. Like like I said, I think just execution and just overall, I felt like this movie had maybe more of a, I guess, like another couple months of fine tuning in both the editing and I guess I'm a little bit more focused. And then like I said, I think it's just a movie that, you know, had it maybe if it was made 10 years earlier and being way more ahead of its time, or if it was made 10 years later and actually would have been more suited for when it was made. It was just kind of caught in that middle ground, which I felt like, you know, some films either just kind of got lost or they're completely forgotten because no one knew what to make out of them at that time. Because, you know, going through a transitional phase, audiences can sometimes not catch on to things at a time.
Yeah.
And some films are, unfortunately, get lost in that shuffle. This is one of them, in my opinion.
Interesting.
Yes.
It kind of reminded me of the way a TV movie would have been shot back then, shot and edited.
Yeah, it definitely felt, and actually what Ryan mentioned too, that it felt like this could be a play. I was like, I could totally see this being a play. Like, it's very contained. You could do a lot of stuff with lighting and just sound effects and all that stuff. And I think it would actually be, in getting that audience reaction feedback, I think it would actually kind of help elevate and add some energy to it and help make the lull parts maybe go by a little more.
Audience participation, especially towards the end,
right,
where they see he's going mad, maybe they're going a little bit mad, and as an actor you can feed off of that too.
And I also just feel like the whole him of him slowly becoming institutionalized per se or mentally unstable, I felt was like the least believable thing in the entire movie, because they're just doing scenes just to get there. They're not actually exploring him going insane. It's just more just, if they tried, if you guys felt that, then it just, I don't think it was that. I don't know. To me, the tragedy of it happening when it's like such a tragedy, I'm like, was it?
Well, we as an audience now, having seen what we've seen, we knew that was going to happen. But back then, in 63, I think they were a bit more optimistic, so they weren't expecting that kind of an ending. They were thinking, oh, maybe he'd get out of it, especially when he found out who the murderer was, but he slipped into insanity. That's the big tragic
death. That was actually kind of like a very abrupt. He's like, there's a load up my mind, and then cuts to him the girl talking to the doctor. He's catatonic now. Raise your arm.
No.
That's it. Yep. It's just like, there's no...
I think there might have been a scene missing there.
Yeah, there's no final snapping moment, you know? Like, you think it's the rain scene or whatever like that, but then he comes back and everything like that.
Well, that's the whole thing, is it's supposed... Again, because, like, alluding to what he was saying, Alex was saying, back then they might have not have had as much inclination to know what was going to happen, and that's kind of what the movie is doing, is it's kind of like going back and forth of, like, is he going crazy or is he going to be fine? Is he going to make it out and kind of recover with, like, this whole, like, after he solves the whole mystery and everything and takes this guy down, is he going to make it out? And back then with the optimism, a little more optimism and things like that.
Maybe.
They were a little more hopeful, and then you get that twist and it's like, oh, shit.
I don't even call it a twist. It was just sort of...
Back then it might have been, though.
Yeah. No, I don't... I feel like even the argument might even be able... to be made that we don't see a dramatic transformation of really of this character, because maybe there wasn't one to be had in the first place. Like, maybe you have to be a little bit crazy in the first place to even think of doing what he did.
Yeah.
So maybe it kind of
it could have been like something that
brought out his tendencies that were latent all along. I don't know. We don't see this guy interacting in the real world before he takes it upon himself to do this thing. So.
I don't know. I guess just the stress, or like, I guess the fanning flame of whether of like, is he going insane with his like his girlfriend, aka pretend sister, and all that? Was just like kind of like the most tedious part of the whole movie, in my opinion. I was just kind of, I don't care about any of this. This is kind of like the back and forth, will he or won't he? You know, it's like, will she do this? It's like, I don't care. Just get on with it.
Yeah.
But
I think what happened though is that like between like the very end bit when he's like fighting the guy and stuff like that, like, it could have been very well that they could have been, put him in for another shock treatment, possibly.
But again, we're speculating.
We are speculating, for sure.
And that to me is just like, okay, again, like that's to me like part of like a pacing issue, or just felt like something is off, or something missing. I don't know, this feel like another 10, you know, little refining, little like maybe just little things just to, you don't need this because it just adds more questions at the end, or if you add this, this answers a lot of shit. Just to make it a little bit more seamless instead of a bit awkward, because that's the whole movie just feels awkwardly put together in a sense. It just feels like another, maybe you just need one more cook in the kitchen to give like last minute notes. Just to go like, yeah, if you just made this tiny little 5% adjustments throughout the whole movie, then you have a 100% perfect movie.
So you're saying you want to remake it?
With Zach as the lead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'd be down for that. That'd be good.
And Andrew can be the cop.
Oh, but that's where the movie goes wrong.
Yeah, because so you'll try to keep correct it, and you'll be like, no, Andrew,
I want it. Andrew has to play the Confederate soldier.
Oh,
the cowboy hat, and that's who he has to play, because I could just see him going, whee!
Yeah. Except in your version, I'll just be a pizza boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be pizza boy.
He'll be a Confederate pizza boy.
Yeah, Confederate pizza boy. I'd love to see that. Got to deliver the pizza to the troops. Gotta go across enemy lines
for history.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Be good.
It's my tradition. It's not racist.
Would there be any connection to this, or any throwback to Girl Interrupted? Because that was
I haven't seen that, so I wouldn't know.
You can kind of say that to like he was saying, like just mention all like the mental institution movies.
That's
right?
Probably the only way we could shoehorn that in.
Right, right.
It's
so
a different movie.
Like there's a little bit of that for sure, but yeah. But I mean, overall, it's like, I don't know. Like, I guess it could have inspired like all those movies a little bit. I mean, well, Shutter Island, it did.
Yeah.
Like for sure, because Scorsese said it did. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a great range of opinions on it, which I love. Always makes the discussion points very, very good. But I mean, the point of our show is to determine if it is underrated. So, I mean, we might as well go on around back in the opposite direction that we went before.
Ooh, counterclockwise.
Yeah,
where we're sitting.
Yeah, thank you. I'm super directionally challenged. Don't worry, I don't have a driver's license. Jack, do you feel that this film is underrated? Is it worth watching, or should you just like, nah, skip it?
That's a good question. Because I am fascinated of exploring more of the filmmaker's library. So in a sense, it has intrigued me about because again, the concept and like the themes and how he treated them, I thought, you know, was interesting. And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't poorly done in that sense. I just feel like my only issues with the film is just it was made at a time where I felt like its execution was hindered just because of just the year it was made. Just it was caught in the middle of like old and new Hollywood, and I felt like those clashing styles did not work. And I don't think that was done intentionally. I think that's just is what it was at the time. But if you're, you know, I think there's enough good elements to recommend seeing it. just don't expect a lost, you know, masterpiece, in my opinion. You know, some people might think this is a masterpiece, and, you know, I can definitely see why. But I just feel like it's just a neat film to watch. Because, like I said, I got more of a kick of just seeing the clashing styles at the time. Mm-hmm. So as a filmmaker, as a cinephile or whatever you want to call it, it's fascinating in that sense. But as its own piece of entertainment, it's a mixed bag for me. So I don't know if I would call it personally for me like an underrated, you know, you missed this. How dare you miss this? But for us film nerds, I feel like it's an interesting piece of cinema that it does deserve to be discussed among this filmmaker's filmography. And just, again, of its time, it's one film you can, as an example of just showcasing how Hollywood was changing at the time, this is a perfect example of actually seeing it. So yeah, I think some people like it. I think some people, you don't need to. So that's my two cents.
Okay. Fair enough. Cool. All right, Alex, we know how it made you feel. would you recommend it to anybody?
I'm on the fence about that. I'll take one of Jack's cents and mix it with my own. That it's tough because it's a decent film, and in terms of film history, it's interesting to see a film like this, again with what Jack said, between old and new, and it being stuck somewhere in the middle. But it's a good way to get into Samuel Fuller's filmography. If this is the intro to his films, if this is the first one you see, then maybe this will get you into White Dog and all the rest of them. Because now I'm interested in seeing more of what he's done.
Interesting.
And more, I haven't seen a lot of films from the 60s. Of course, there's Easy Rider.
Well, yeah.
There's
yeah.
The Great Race. There's Psycho. And there are probably some of the more famous ones. But this one, it's tough. I don't have a coin, so I can't flip. I got to actually think about this one. You know what? I'm gonna say this is a one and done for me.
Okay.
It was interesting to see. I thank you for bringing it in, but I probably won't see it again unless I have a lobotomy. Then I'll be watching it over and over every day.
Then it'll be riveting.
Just be at my house, just like drooling.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. I'll be at Shot Jack's quarter. House. Yeah.
Give me some milk. Give me some milk. Give me some milk.
It's for your bones.
I would just sit through the credits and then have a nice nap, and then whatever you dream of will be worth.
You'll see Constant Towers
in color.
Yeah.
In very grainy stock footage color.
Yeah.
We're in a different place now.
You're glimpsing someone's delusion. Gosh.
With flashes of sanity.
Yes, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah, and those dreams like always used to be kind of those, like, it was happening like with those flashes of sanity that were coming into, like, each time they'd go to the color, it was like when they were like starting to like snap out of it a little bit, where you could like get the next clue or what have you. So I guess technically it's
breathing life back into their souls.
Sure.
That's what the color symbolizes. It's bringing life back into their damaged black and white souls and minds.
And booties.
Yeah.
Gotta get a booty in there at some point.
Well, the colors tended to appear when a character was describing or experiencing something traumatic, but sure, we'll call it soothing.
Into the mind of Jack we go.
Within the mind.
You'll never escape. I just constantly have murder on my mind.
No. Help.
You send to Jack's mailbox, Jack's mailbox sends to you.
In Soviet Russia.
Mailbox.
Okay, well, Zach, I guess you have a pretty good idea what you think of this movie
already.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen this many times over the years. I mean, I don't personally have a problem with the pace. I find it's a wild ride. It's, for me, it's pretty engaging. And in terms of, like, the whole time period and stuff, I guess I was more accepting of the time that it came out. Even though it was made in 10 days and things like that, it was just kind of like, okay, well, I can kind of look past all of that. Like, I didn't have any problems with cuts or things like that because the story to me was more interesting and kind of what was going on. I was more kept up with that versus, like, certain cuts and things like that, which I guess I more took as, like, the time. Like, I wasn't really bothered by that, and it didn't really hinder the movie itself for me. And, yeah, with the runtime and things like that, I don't think it's too long. I think with him spending time with each person, as Alex had said, like, yeah, it's the patience thing, but he's also just trying everything. He's trying to kind of get with them and kind of live almost in their habitat and their world just to get, like, that next little clue, but it's kind of flying too close to the sun, if you will, because yes. He pays for it at the end, even though... You know, I don't want to spoil anything, but, you know, there's good things out of the ending, too, a little bit. But the, obviously, him going mentally insane also kind of sucks for him. But, yeah, I find
for
overall...
for the greater good.
For the greater, greater good. For the greater good. but overall, I just find that, yeah, just some of the style things are really cool in this movie. I find that it really stands out with the performances and things like that versus, like, other movies. Like, other directors, if they had made an Insane Asylum movie at that time, I think it would be even more bland. I think it would be a little more straightforward, yada yada. Whereas with him, at least he made it very entertaining. It is a bit pulpy. He's known for that, for sure, especially at that time. A lot of his films have that, like, very pulp feel and things like that, but I kind of like it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like the, like, mix of, like, camp and contemporary,
yeah, exactly,
as well.
Exactly.
Although it would be interesting to see where it would fall if it was firmly on either side of that, but, like, I didn't mind the fact that it kind of mixed.
No, it didn't bother me.
I mean,
it
especially
me.
Against the backdrop of a mental institution, like,
yeah, so things are going to be
crazy. It's
going to
be a little chaotic.
It's going to
be a little disorganized. It's going to be a little over the top. It's going to be a lot over the top in some cases, but, like, I feel it works for the for the tone of the story. Like, it's definitely, it's not a perfect movie, but, like, I really like the small budget feel and, like, what they did with the little bit of time and money that they had. And yeah, it keeps me invested.
Yes, my dick quit.
Whoa,
that's my review.
All right, I don't think I can say it any better than that. So, I mean. Check out this movie. I mean, we got a mixture of opinions here, so the best thing to do is to watch it for yourself and decide what you think of it. And even better, have a dip into the rest of Samuel Fuller's filmography as well.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, don't forget to like us on Facebook, listen to us on SoundCloud and Spotify, follow us on Twitter and Instas and all that good stuff. Don't forget to like the videos, too. You're about to hear them in a little bit for the outro. Because I'm about out of things to say. Until next time, this is You Missed It, and we should soon be back, hopefully with all five of us. But until then, bye-bye.
La 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 la.
La.
La.